Alex Sanchez.
Hello, what's up, man?
What's going on, bro? Oh, he's drinking water.
Sorry, man. I'm really thirsty, dude.
It's the ASMR, man. You got to make like random noises. Like.
No, and they said you get rid of the virus by drinking a lot of water.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know if I can mention, can I mention that?
Are we allowed to mention that, Sam?
Yeah, because if we're not allowed.
You can tell people that you're not a medical expert.
You're right.
Oh, yeah.
Well, but can we use the C word?
Yeah, because I know they're demonetizing stuff on YouTube.
Yes. Yeah. We'll just.
Well, we got to
forget it. Let's just say Corona.
Yeah, Corona.
Corona. Yeah. Let's
Rona.
Just forget it, man.
We'll say Rona. Yeah,
Ronavirus.
The Rona.
Yeah.
The Rona bug.
The Rona bug. Yeah.
We gotta
There's a lot of crazy stuff happening in the market because of the virus that's going on right now. But no, I want to get started with you, my friend. So tell us, the listeners, a little bit about yourself. I know you got featured in some pretty cool stuff recently.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool stuff with you guys.
Yeah, with us, right? You were on CNBC Make It, and then you were on the Graham Stephan Show, and you did a lot of cool stuff. People got to hear your story.
Yeah.
But tell the listeners, man, like, who are you? You know what I mean? And feel free to go as long as you want.
I want to, like, not talk too much. And
no,
the thing about me, I get, you know, I start taking a different path, and I veer off.
No, I'm the same way. You're good. You're good.
So my name's Alex Sanchez. Mm-hmm. I've lived in Illinois my whole life. I've lived in the western suburbs, the Chicagoland suburbs. Mm-hmm. I'm just a normal kid, dude. I still feel like a kid. I went to West Chicago Community High School. I've lived in West Chicago. And for those of you that, you know, were watching my story on CNBC, I know a lot of people thought that I lived in the west side of Chicago,
right.
Like the hood. No, West Chicago is not affiliated with Chicago. I'm about 40 miles west, 40 minutes west,
yeah.
Give or take.
Yeah, because West Chicago is its own, like it's its own
its
city.
Own
like,
city,
it's
yeah,
its own
exactly.
Town, yeah.
So, and everybody in the comments, oh, you know, he lives in the hood or this and that.
But people don't know.
People don't know. So I just want to clear that up. So yeah, I lived there in West Chicago. When I was in high school, I was probably one of the worst students ever.
Yeah.
You know, people liked me. I was likable. I was, you know, funny, but people just saw me as like the class clown. And whether, you know, I made people laugh, but deep down, I know people are like, oh yeah, this guy's an idiot.
Oh really?
You know,
what was your GPA? I'm trying to figure out if it was lower than mine.
No.
Mine was pretty low.
No, but hold on.
Yeah.
I don't think I've met anyone that, you know, at least in, you know, in personal finance that I've talked to that's had a lower GPA than I have.
Really?
Yeah. Mine. So I graduated with a 1.8.
Okay. I was about there.
You were?
Yeah. I was about like 1.8, 1.9.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty bad. You know,
that's very bad.
according to the system. Yeah, no, that's horrible. I had a class where I should have failed, and I should have been I should have gone back to, you know, pass that class. But at the end, when I got my report card, I asked the teacher, I'm like, well, why did you give me a passing grade? He gave me a D, but I did not turn in any homework assignment. I didn't do anything.
Were you a bad kid in high school or?
No, I wasn't a troublemaker. I just, I ditched.
Yeah. Oh, and I see. You just didn't like school.
Dude, I could not stand school. And I tried because, you know, I wanted to fit in. I would see my cousins. I would see other friends. They're like, yeah, we're going to college, this and that. You know, they would do their homework. I'm like, dude, how do they do it and how can I? Like, I was so lazy that when, like, people offered me their homework assignments to copy off of them, I'm like, no. I don't.
Really?
I'm like, I'll just take the F for this. I don't even feel like copying that down. Oh. And I, you know, I don't feel like, I'll just, you know, I'll take credit for what I did, which was nothing. So yeah, the teacher pretty much told me, he's like, hey, I'm like, hey, why did you pass me? Cause like, I should have failed this class. He's like, dude, I just want you to go out there in the real world. You know,
What a nice guy.
Yeah. And you know, he wanted me to pass. He didn't want me to, you know, stay back another year. And yeah, I did. And I needed that credit to graduate, and thank God, you know, he passed me.
Wow.
And, but yeah, I was that bad.
What class was it?
I completely forgot.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't there. Most of the time I wasn't there.
Yeah.
And then I live in front of the high school that I attended. So it was just super easy for me to just walk out and go to my house. And then my buddies, they love to ditch too. So sometimes I wanted to do the good thing, and then they were waiting for me right by my classroom. They're like, hey, dude, let's just let's go get breakfast.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all right, dude, you know, I was easily peer pressured to do that because I didn't like it. I was kind of hoping, I hope my friends don't, they influenced me to ditch class today because I didn't want to, go. But yeah, so I was bad in school, but I had that bug that I'm like, I want to succeed.
Yeah.
And I don't think school defines success.
Definitely not. Yeah.
So I guess I was naive, but I'm like, you know, I'm going to do it and I'm going to prove everyone wrong that I can do it without school. But I always knew, since I was a kid, I was always doing things to make money.
Yeah.
I just like not being dependent on my parents to have money to, you know, to go to the movies, when you're a kid or whatever, selling lemonade, selling candy bars. I would lie to people and tell them that it was for school fundraisers, but it was just to make money.
Yeah. So why not, man?
You know, I had to do what I had to do. I mean, I couldn't get a job. So I was doing that snow removal, leaf cleanups when I was a kid. So it was always in my DNA, work ethic. Mm-hmm. So I'm a big believer that work ethic, that's will help you become successful. Like without work ethic, you're nothing. Yeah. Because even when you graduate college, you need good work ethic. Like you need that drive to go get a job.
Oh, for sure, dude.
And that's when work ethic comes in.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, yeah. So I know, like I said, I got carried away with talking about school, but anyway, I graduated high school. I knew that, I tried college. Mm-hmm. I tried college one semester.
Where'd you go?
I went to COD.
COD, nice. Because
I wasn't, first of all, I didn't like school, so why was I going to waste any more money trying to pursue other colleges? So I went to COD and I signed up for full time. I was going and then I was getting like essays to write every single night. I'm like, oh my God, this is worse than high school. So I wasn't doing it. I was, I was more focused on working. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't doing a lot of assignments because I was working. And the next, I'm like, dude, stop wasting time. So I decided to stop showing up. Mm. I lost that money. Next year I got motivated. Like, I don't know what motivated me, but I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go in there and I'm going to knock this out. I'm going to get my degree, whatever. And I was motivated because I talked to a counselor at the school. And I don't know what went wrong, but obviously I dropped out again. So I wasted money again.
Yeah.
And, ever since that, I started getting into the trades. And I'm like, I started realizing that I could make good money in the trades. My cousin is a licensed plumber. Mm-hmm. I have other cousins that do, electrical work. They're licensed electricians. And the plumbing thing caught my idea because I was working with my cousin. He's got his own business. Mm-hmm. I was looking at all the invoices, material. So I would see pretty much how much would come in, how much would go out in costs. And I'm like, wow, this guy's making good money. Mm. So I was going to, he kind of influenced me to like follow plumbing. But at the time, I was trying different things. I was trying, applying at local unions to like get in for like pipe welding. And then I met my girlfriend, her mom. Hey, you should apply. We might have to cover that up because I don't want to disclose that.
Sure.
She said, hey, you should apply at, at the utility company where I work at. And I didn't think anything of it. My mind was on plumbing. Mm. And I'm like, Okay, whatever. What do I have to lose? I got the interview, boom, I got in, whatever. And then, I started to figure out that I could make really good money following this. So I changed my career path kind of from plumbing to this because it was paying more. And I'll go with whatever's paying more in the moment. And I knew that the opportunity to, to double, triple my income was there. So I said bye to plumbing and I stuck with this. Because I wasn't getting union pay for plumbing. I was getting like dirt.
Oh, really?
Dirt, helper pay. Mm. So, I was going to get basically 2X, raise.
Sure.
I was going to get a 2X raise. So I'm like, I'm going to follow this. And, to make long story long, right? What I do now is I love it. Mm. I never thought I'd be doing it.
What do you do right now for the people who are listening in?
I'm an overhead lineman. I work on the power lines, the maintenance of the power lines, upgrading the electrical grid. And, anytime we have emergency work, anytime there's a storm, anytime you're out of power, I'm there to restore the power. I'm there to keep the lights on. Mm. So it's rewarding. It's financially rewarding, but it's also rewarding in the sense that you're helping people.
Oh, for sure.
And it's nice when, you do have a storm and you have people come outside, they give you, fruits, drinks. Water. They're offering you beer, stuff like that. Obviously, we don't take that.
Yeah.
But, they're like, oh, thank you guys so much. We saw, like, they see that, you know, we're out there working hard when, you know, when we're really needed, when the storms. Mm-hmm. You don't really notice linemen on a regular day.
Sure, on a sunny day.
On a sunny day.
Right, 75 right? degrees outside.
75 degrees, you know, everyone's nothing got power. Wrong. No. And you truly know what a lineman does when it's a situation where you're out of power and you need power, right? Because we rely so much. You can't function without electricity.
Sure. Oh,
can't
no Wi-Fi.
No Wi-Fi, no phones.
Oh my gosh,
it's horrible. Yeah. Your fridge, you know, all the food in your fridge goes to waste. So that's when you realize and you know, you're like, okay, that's what a lineman does. So I never thought I'd be doing it. Everybody's scared of electricity. I used to be scared of electricity. I was scared of heights.
Really?
I was just petrified. I was like, I would get nervous. But now it's like I learned to overcome that fear. Because I have to, you know, I have to do this day in and day out.
Yeah.
But now it's like, wow, I never would have guessed that I would be doing this. And at the end of the day, I love what I do. Yeah. I wouldn't change my path for anything else. Yeah.
And I think I'm okay with asking this question because I know CNBC already kind of like disclosed it. But I think they said you make like, what, $230,000 a year or something like that is what the CNBC video / article said.
Yeah.
That's really good. That's more than what like executives make and like certain VPs of certain companies I met.
Yeah. It's hard for me to grasp that idea. It's like, it's almost like I don't believe it. It's like, really, how am I making that or whatever? But it, you know, I'm thankful. I work my butt off. You know, I miss a lot of, you know, family get togethers, but it's something I'm willing to do now because I have goals. You know, a lot of the overtime that I do get is because I want to work, because I know I have to, because if I want to hit my long-term goals, I know I got to do it.
Yeah.
Day in, day out, even if I'm tired, even when I don't want to do it, most of the time you don't want to do it. I love to stay home and relax, be with my family, be with my dogs, you know, the girlfriend.
Right.
But ultimately, you know, I got a little obsession with my goals and I don't want to live life with regret. You know, saying, why didn't I do it? Or what if I would have done it? You know, I'm just going all in.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I expect, yeah, unfortunately that was a bad thing about the CNBC video where like, I try to keep my stuff private. I like, I want to stay humble, but it's like now that this article came out, it kind
everybody
of,
knows.
Kind of everybody knows. And they're like, oh yeah.
Look at this guy. How many phones and text messages you get after that?
Yeah.
After that
video came out. Typical, you know, people messaging you saying, hey man, you're killing it. You're doing good. It's like, oh, okay. I haven't talked to you in years, but I mean, I don't blame them, dude.
Yeah, for sure.
That's how we are as human beings. So I don't blame them and nothing against them, you know?
Yeah, same.
And I try to be a good dude. I'll reply. I don't care. I'm not cool. I'm
not just too like, cool for school.
Exactly. I'm not too cool for school, but yeah, it's pretty crazy too. You know, most of the year, most of my, you know, last year I worked pretty much 8 months out of the 12 months was pretty much apprentice pay. So I was still making apprentice pay with the income that I did report with CNBC. So this year, you know, I'm excited that I'll be able to add a little bit more to the income as my W-2 income and other types of incomes with my investments.
And somewhere in there, you got into real estate. And, you know, this podcast is called The First Deal Experience.
Yeah.
You know, we're telling stories about how somebody did their first real estate transaction.
Yeah.
Right. So when did you start? When did you start looking at real estate? Like, when did that interest start like happening?
I was 19, going on 20. Like I mentioned before, like I knew I always wanted to be successful, or you know, be able to build wealth for you know, so I could change my family tree, so I could change the generations of you know, struggling with money. I got into that, but I didn't see the information, right? Because, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And it wasn't until like, I don't know if you remember this. Do you remember?
Oh, heck yeah, dude. I was in it.
You're in?
Oh, yeah. We probably have to like blot out the name, right? We're fine?
Yeah. Right. So anyways, we were in that pyramid.
Yeah, screw those guys. They promised you the BMW.
Oh yeah, dude. Absolutely. I was probably like your downline, you know. I was on one of your legs making.
Yeah, I had one person.
Yeah,
I had one person in my leg.
Really?
Yeah, wow. I skipped leg day.
Dude. We all did, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So ultimately, you know, I've always had an open mind, and one of my best friends, Asian dude. Mm-hmm. I felt like it was in the Asian community more than anything.
The Asians, man. Dude, money hungry. They're money hungry.
I know. And you guys are
success driven.
Success driven, dude.
Maybe actually that's a better word.
Yeah. Not money hungry, success driven.
Sure.
Yeah, so he approaches me because I was working hard and he knew I had goals. I would talk to him about them. He knew I was about the money. So he's like, hey, dude, you know, I got this opportunity. You know, it's only, you sign up, it's $500, blah, blah, blah. You know, he just pitched it out like that. I'm like, I'm like, dude, let's go check it out. I mean, I'm down.
So you went to a home meeting.
I went one of those, those little home meetings. I'm like, I walked out pumped, you know, I'm like, you know what? Here's my debit card. Let's get it. You know, I was excited. And I love the idea that everybody had the same mindset. Mm-hmm. So you were surrounded by a bunch of like people with the same thoughts as you. And you felt like you were at home because I felt like I was at home. Cause like, it's like, I can never talk to anyone about this. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, finally, boom, this hit me. Finally, I found what I've been looking for. I didn't know I was looking for it, but I found it. So that whole pyramid scheme thing was kind of, you know, it was a pyramid scheme, right?
Right. Or multi-level marketing.
It was multi-level marketing, but it didn't work for us. We lost money. But what I got out of it was to me, it was a blessing in disguise.
Yeah. That's what I always say about multi-level marketing companies. Here's the thing. I don't think it's a bad opportunity. Like, I don't think it's bad at all. Like, do people make money off of it? Yes. Like, some people do. Do the majority of people? No.
No.
Probably not. You know what I mean? Because it is a zero-sum game. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, in order for you to do well, like, other people have to not do well.
The odds are against you.
The odds are against you. But I will say it is phenomenal for, like, personal development.
Oh, yeah.
And just the community of being surrounded with like-minded people.
Yeah. Yeah, that whole situation or that whole experience, I would never take it back.
Yeah.
Because that's what opened up my mind. There were so many smart dudes in there and so many motivated dudes. And I still, you know, keep, I'm supposed to meet up with them, with one of them, like in a couple of weeks. He's Asian as well, right?
Nice. Alex and the Asians.
Yeah. Right. But, anyway, I'm supposed to meet up with him. And I just learned so much from all those guys.
Yeah.
And one of the guys, like he was kind of like our leader because he was so freaking good at talking, dude. He was a ninja. He was like a ninja salesman. Because that's another thing we learned how to be, right?
Salesmen. Yeah, salespeople.
So I learned so much from him and he's like, hey, dude, you should, you know, this is cool and stuff, but you need to read books. He's like, you should read this book. And then the one that caught my attention is Rich Dad Poor Dad. He would always be like, dude, read Rich Dad Poor Dad. Read it. And I'm like, yeah, dude, for sure. But when I went home, I'm like, I don't like books. I'm not a reader. So I kept pushing aside. Like a year later, year and a half later, I finally, Rich Dad Poor Dad just shows up. I think it showed up on YouTube as a recommended book to
audiobook.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. So that's cool thing about YouTube is there's a lot of audiobooks on there, but as soon as they get flagged, they get, you know, taken down. So if you could catch a book on there before it's flagged from YouTube, then you'll get it for free. And, you know, for a few months that was on there, every now and then it gets, you know, taken down and then someone puts it back up. I listened to the book and pretty much when I listened to that book, I'm like, dude, like this was that aha moment, the epiphany, changed my life around. I'm like, dude, I'm tired. You know, I'm tired of being sick and tired. And I'm like, you know, now I have the mindset. It's like, now how do I do it? And real estate, you know, Robert Kiyosaki talks a lot about real estate and that's what got me hooked on real estate. I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. And as soon as I read that book, I started reading more books that were just related more to real estate.
Yeah. So you learned.
Yeah. I learned and it was like the aha moment, like, dude, this is what I want to do. I want to do real estate. I just loved it. All made sense to me. And I'm like, dude, this is like dummy proof. You know, a lot of people can understand it because it's super practical. Wow. So yeah, that's how I got into real estate.
So that's how you got interested in real estate. How did you do your first deal? Tell me about that.
Yeah. So at the time when I got into real estate, I wasn't making that much money. So, and I was looking at deals, but I was like, dude, I need money to do these deals. Cause you know, I would hear about obviously the no money, low money down, but it was like a sense of pride where like, no, I want to do with my money. Cause it's ownership, it's equity, stuff like that. So it was more of an ego thing. So I stuck to not learning about low money down. And, for five straight years, audiobooks, YouTube, podcasts, and then a couple seminars that were pretty much scaminars.
Scaminar. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
I probably went to the same ones you did.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sure. Like, oh, yeah, it's, you know, come in, free opportunity to learn, you know, this and that. And then I get there, it's like they didn't teach me a single thing.
Yeah, well, they teach you just enough for you to go, oh, man, I want to buy this thing now.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I'm like, you know, because they're at the ones I went to, they were charging you like $6,000-$7,000, you know, a few grand just to get you started. And then someone's like, yeah, that's how they hook you. And then you got to do the next class.
Yeah.
And then in order for that class to be good for you, you got to do the next one. So it's like, you got to keep upscaling it. And I do understand that that's good for some people. But at the time I'm like, dude, I don't got money and I want to start a deal. So I'm like, I'm going to take the other approach, the, you know, the free approach.
Yeah,
and I just started learning for like 5 years and ultimately saving up to buy my first deal. So 5 years later, I got the opportunity. I had cash saved up and my agent sends me he sent me a condo.
Okay. So you were working with the realtor.
My realtor, he's a broker.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got his own brokerage. He's got people that work for him. So he is my best friend's dad.
Oh, sweet.
So I told him, hey, I'm into real estate, this and that. And I guess I got to rewind a little bit because my very first deal that didn't go through, that was, you know, probably like 2 years after I started saving up money. I think I just had enough because I was going to do an FHA loan.
Mm.
I had just enough money to like cover my FHA down payment. And I wasn't going to have too much money for like as a reserve.
Mm-hmm.
And that was going to be down in Joliet. It was a duplex.
Oh, man. We're in Joliet.
Yeah. It's funny. My girlfriend lives in Joliet.
Mm-hmm.
And I always joke around, you know.
Does she live like in Joliet or is she even like?
Yeah. She lives in like
in Joliet.
Oh, man.
See, my wife used to live in Lockport.
Oh, okay.
So I used to go 355 all the time, dude.
Same here.
Yeah, all the
time. All those tolls, all those, you know, they get expensive as you get down closer to Joliet.
Illinois, man.
I know. So yeah, she lives in the, you know, not so great area. Yeah. And I would always joke around. I'd say Joylet. Oh, I'm going to Joylet.
It is the Joylet. Yeah.
But she gets so mad. Like, oh, why do you always make fun of Joliet? But anyway, it was a duplex. I was excited. The numbers made sense, but you know, I was still naive and I was still like new to it that I didn't like factor in other expenses.
How old were you at like this time?
21.
Oh, so this is like right after you started like reading and getting into real estate.
Yeah. Like I said, I got into it like 19 and then 21, like 2 years later where I, you know, I had saved, I think I had like 10 grand because I think the deal was going to be like 7,000 for the down payment. Mm-hmm. But after closing costs, you know, it adds up a little bit more.
Yeah, it does.
But I was going to do it. I paid for the inspection fee. And the day that I paid for the inspection fee, I was with inspector and I'm looking at the place with him. He's like, yeah, you know, they kind of scare you. The inspectors, they're like, oh, this is wrong with it. And this is wrong. But you know, you're paying them to like point out obvious
for sure
little meticulous issues. So we're looking at it. And then I meet the tenants that are on the first floor. So I started asking him questions like, you know, I want to learn more about the property, about the owner. He's like, yeah, man, this and that. But I don't remember what we talked about, but what did catch my mind or my attention, I mean, is that he's like, yeah, dude, I got a plant. And I'm like, yeah, what kind of plant? He's like, you know, man, you want some? And I was like, what?
Like,
what? This guy's going.
And this was before it got legalized, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So this guy, I see that he has, he's growing marijuana.
Oh, man.
Inside of his unit.
It's his botanical garden.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to call it that, right?
Right.
And then, I don't know if he did it to scare me or, you know, he probably had no intention of doing it.
He probably didn't care.
Yeah.
He probably just thought you were another dude.
Yeah, exactly. And I do remember I was trying to keep it from them that I was going to be the buyer.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just like, oh, yeah, I'm just here inspecting.
Yeah, I never do that. Even when I walk around, I'm like, yeah, I work for the property management company.
Yeah.
That's the one I use a lot. Yeah. I work for the property management company.
Yeah.
Even though I'm the owner, I'm just like, nope. I work for the property management company.
Yeah. And that's a little bit hard for me to, that's something I need to work on.
Because
I'm just so outgoing that, you know, I tell them, or they kind of assume and I kind of give in, which I need to change. Obviously, that's one of my downfalls that you know, you don't really want them to know who you are, because then they take advantage of you. But that's when, you know, I stay firm with my decisions, and I don't care if I build a good relationship with them. I let them know what the rules are. We could have a, so luckily it hasn't bit me in the, you know, behind
the rear.
In the rear. But, you know, I let them know that we could have a good relationship, but when it comes to business, business is business, and that's going to override our relationship.
Yeah.
Which I'm not saying it's good, what I'm doing, but that's something I need to work on.
Sure. Let's get back to the botanical garden.
Yeah. So as soon as he told me that, you know, that's when it just threw some red flags, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm backing out. I remember I spent like $450 for the inspection.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
No, it was like $500 because the guy wanted to charge me per unit, right?
Oh, he did.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. He kind of, and I've used him before. I mean, after that, and he's kind of expensive, but you know, my broker knows him, so
does he do a good job?
Yeah, he actually does. He does.
I'll pay for that all day long.
Yeah.
Because there was a house I bought about a year ago. It was in Indiana. And I bought it to put it out on nightly rentals. And it does great. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does really well. I think we make like $5,500 a month. So it does really well, right? But when we first bought it, we paid like $460 something for the inspection. Mm-hmm. And so he does the inspector, did a terrible job. Horrible job. So
what did he miss?
A week into me owning this thing, I get a call from my partner who runs the nightly rental side. Mm-hmm. So he's like the host, right? Cause I don't know anything about that. So he's the host, and he gives me a call. He's like, bro, like I got a call from our contractor. Mm-hmm. And his contractor was his cousin. So we were like, oh, sweet. Okay. And he gave us a sick deal. Like I think he did like drywall and electrical stuff. Like he was a GC and he did a bunch of stuff for the master bedroom, and he charged us like $3,000. It was a different guy. It was a roof. Mm-hmm. He did our entire roof for like $3,000, which is phenomenal.
Oh yeah. No, you know what I mean? I know. Yeah.
So he calls me. He's like, hey, our contractor's called, and apparently the water in the second floor bathroom flooded and it created a huge hole into the first floor bathroom. Mm-hmm. So the second floor and the first floor, they're on the same spot in the layout. They're just on top of each other. And I got a picture. It was literally like a giant hole from the second floor. So we found out like, hey, what happened? And the contractor's like, oh, your inspector did a crappy job. He missed the water valve that got rusted off in the home water system.
And that's an issue that's seeable. Because sometimes an inspector can't see what's behind the walls.
Yeah. But it rusted off.
Wow.
And then there was a backup water line in the backyard because the city has like these emergency shutoff valves.
Yeah.
That was also rusted off.
So you couldn't shut the water off?
We couldn't. So the water ran literally like, I think it was for like 5-6 hours.
Yeah.
And it was like $4,000 I had to pay in damages.
Well, that's one of the things I'm dealing with right now, right before today.
That's right.
You know, I have a water leak.
That's right.
That, you know, water does not play any games.
No.
Water is like your worst enemy because it'll destroy a lot of things, especially when it's inside the walls.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's part of the game.
It is part of the game. So the duplex, you didn't go through with it.
Yeah, I didn't go through with it because I didn't want to, you know, I was, you know, that scared me away, the tenant. And that's why I don't like inherit a tenant, especially because I haven't done the screening process and they don't. You know, so that's another thing. I'm like, I would have to inherit them. And I backed out. I told myself I'd rather lose the $500 than, you know, have a sour experience with real estate and then just kind of be turned off. So that was going to be my first one. And I backed out a couple of years later. So I decided to just keep learning and keep saving. That way I could get something in a different area. And at the time I wasn't even looking for a property. Mm-hmm. Because I think I wanted my first deal to be like a 4-unit.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I was more into multifamily when I started with real estate than, you know. What's funny is I told myself, I'm like, why would anyone ever buy a condo? I would never buy a condo. And I bought a condo. That was my first deal. So it's kind of ironic.
Yeah. And you were like, 24 at the time? 23?
20. Yeah. I was
23.
When I bought the first condo, and I had just turned 23, and he sent me a deal. He said, hey, this is it. It's rent ready, which it pretty much was. It mm-hmm. was a decent condo. I just painted, you know, the basics. And I decided at the time, I'm like, well, I have the cash. And I wasn't pre-approved yet. At the time, I was, because you know, when you have a pre-approval, you lose it after like 3 to 6 months. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah. So I'm like, you know what? I have the cash. I'll just do it cash. And at the, you know, I paid for it cash, and I did basic cosmetic work. Like I put flooring in the kitchen because the flooring was super bad. I painted the whole place, and then, you know, change a couple things here and there, light fixtures, stuff like that, stuff that is noticeable.
And you did all the work yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm always like penny pinching.
Sure.
So I'm like, oh man. And then you start to realize like people want to charge you a lot of money to do simple stuff. Where like simple stuff to me, it might be hard stuff for someone that's not, you know, good with their hands. And, you know, you start getting better as you're doing, as I do most of the work, I started getting better. Now I'm pretty good at doing floors, and I enjoy it. The reason I do it too is because I enjoy it.
Yeah. Is it like, therapeutic?
Yes. Yes. And I'm like, dude, I did this, you know, it's, you know, I don't know what it is. Maybe it feeds the ego, but it's like, I'm like, and then I start getting estimates from people. It's like, dude, like,
it's a lot.
Yeah, it's like when you guys went over and to the Warrenville town condo, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Joel, yeah, right?
Yeah,
Joel went over there.
I was explaining to him that people wanted to charge me, like, there's these two guys, you know, they're a small company. And he's like, yeah, man, well, you know, we'll charge you $80 an hour, or I forgot. Yeah, $80 an hour, man. You know, we'll do this. We'll do the floor. We'll do paint, change light fixtures, this and that. We'll do all of it for you. And then I'm like, okay. In my mind, I'm like, okay, two guys, $80 an hour. That's actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was still like thinking about it because I'm like, $40 an hour, you know, to do this. Because it was going to be cash. It was going to be cash transaction. And then he messages me. He's like, yeah, dude, we'll give you a deal, $80 an hour per guy. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Per guy.
I'm like, whoa, per guy? He's like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, no, dude. There's no way in heck I'm paying $80
per
man hour.
So it's $160 for both of them per hour.
Per hour.
Dang.
Yeah. So, you know, I haven't dealt with too many contractors, but that is a lot of money for what I wanted done. Mm-hmm. Simple flooring, simple painting, and just changing light fixtures and stuff like that. Hmm. So I'm like, you know, maybe I haven't found the right person, but I'm just like, I can't, especially not in the beginning as I'm a beginning investor with, you know, not a lot of doors. I'm like, and I truly enjoy doing the work. So I'm like, you know, I can't be doing that. So I do it myself, but it's like, you know, it's a good lesson learned because now it's like, sometimes it's like, it's just better to pay, dude.
Yeah.
Because your time is worth, you got to balance time and money. And sometimes you rather have your time than the money savings.
I always say that 100%. Like if you want to do deals, like focus on the money. But if you want to grow a business, like focus on your time. Because focusing on your time, like that's what leads to you working smarter, you know? Yeah. And it's just, I don't know, man. We live in a world today where people are not interested in investing in themselves as much as you guys like me and you do, you know? Like, because for me, it's just like, yeah, I'll take an L now just so I could be better. I could be better in the next game, so to speak.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
Well, so what happened with the condo? What's the exit strategy? Are you holding on to it? Are you renting it out? Are you?
Yeah, so the condo that I bought, I've had the same tenants there. Mm-hmm. They renewed the lease, and I like them. They're good ladies, and they're happy. And like I said, another reason why they know who I am and that I own it, I try to have a good relationship with them. You know, I want happy tenants because if they could stay in the unit, for, you know, 5 years, you know, I'm just throwing an arbitrary number out there. But tenant turnover is one of your biggest expenses.
100%, yeah.
So even if I don't raise the rent, you know, 5% or what is it, 3% every single year, I think I'm willing to, like, you know, do it every other year, and I'd rather have that place rented. But to begin with, I start with a good price. I never undervalue the rent. You know, I ask for a good amount of rent. That way I don't have to be asking for a raise. Mm-hmm. Raise the rent every year, which I know I should be doing, but I value having a tenant in there a little bit more than raising the rent every year.
The average turnover in Illinois, mm-hmm. and I think this is the case kind of all around the country, just with me doing my best at least to talk to a lot of different investors that invest all over. You know, I talked to a lot of property managers about this too, and the question I ask them is typically, how much is your turnover?
Yeah, that's and something everybody wants to know.
With landlords, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think the average number I get is like $5,000. It's like $5,000 for turnover.
Jeez.
Yeah. And that's without you not doing the work yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that's hiring somebody else to do the floors. Yeah. And it also depends on what it is. Like if it's a class A unit and, you know, now you're talking about granite countertops, you know, vinyl, like flooring and then new painting and like.
Yeah. Well, just with flooring.
It adds up.
Yeah. And just with flooring and painting, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Painters demand good money. It might seem like an easy job, but once you're doing it, you're like, oh my God, this is tedious work. So I understand where they're coming from, but then there's also part of me where I'm like, oh, I'm paying that much money for paint being applied on a wall. But, you know, it's a constant battle I'm in with my, obviously, you know, I'm trying to save, but also, you know, your time. Mm-hmm. So I'm slowly going to push it off to the side where I'm not doing it as I start getting better at picking out deals, because if the better the deal you pick, the more you can afford to, you know, lose, you mm-hmm. know, quote unquote lose, because you have the money to pay those contractors to do it. Because if you have a really good deal, you really shouldn't be doing the work.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to think about saving pennies or saving dollars by or doing,
saving pennies. Is,
yeah, yeah, saving, yeah, yeah. You know, do it by you doing the work, you're going to save money. So you're better off just, I've started realizing that you're better off finding a really good deal than finding a mediocre deal and trying to make it work by you know, trying to do all the work for the unit.
Mm. So I love how patient you were though to do your first deal. Cause I mean, I come across a lot of people and they're just like, I just need to do my first deal. Next 3 months, my goal is to do my first deal.
Yeah.
So you can't do that. You know what I mean? Cause now your entire business plan is predicated on you hitting that goal within the first 3 months.
Yeah.
You know
and,
I mean?
And then, yeah. And then now you're risking doing a mediocre deal or just an average deal because you're like, oh, I got my first deal done.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, just be patient. And now I try to tell people to be patient, that there's plenty of deals that will come, you know, it'll be dry. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sometimes I feel like it's really, really dry, but I still tell myself that there's always going to be something out there.
And I always tell people, listen, like when you're looking at deals, look for reasons for you not to do it. Instead of, because like we live in a world now where like this information is accessible. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like, you ever like met somebody who they took one MMA class and now they think they can kick everyone's butt?
Yeah.
Like we know a lot of those people. But it's the mm-hmm. same thing in real estate. Like they'll read a book.
Same concept.
Same concept. Yeah. So like they'll read an article or they'll watch a video, right? And they're like, oh man, this real estate thing.
Stock market too.
I can
do it.
I've
been dealing with that.
Really?
Yeah, I've been dealing with the stock market. People have been like, oh, yeah, like, you know, it's like they know because they read a couple articles and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Absolutely.
And I used to like look for reasons not to do it. Because, I mean, we live in the world where it's like, you know, and I get it. Like, we want to go to the parties and talk about, oh, man, like, I just bought this 8-unit building. Like, it mm-hmm. cash flows $600 a month, which, in my opinion, that's horrible for an 8-unit.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? But that's what we want to do. So it's just like, look for a reason not to do it. So what would you say you've learned? Like, what are like the top 2 or 3 things you've learned in the first deal, like you doing that first deal?
That stuff's always more expensive than you think.
Yeah.
You know, hidden expenses always rise, you know, anytime you're working on something and you've done your numbers, it'll always be more than what you thought.
Yeah. What were the hidden expenses for you? Because it's different for everyone, but for you, what was it?
And not necessarily with that unit, mm-hmm. but like with another unit that I bought just above it. What I didn't know is that it was in a flood zone. So that's a good thing to know. Know if your property or if your unit is in a flood zone. Because flood insurance is ridiculous. It's so expensive.
Wow.
So since I bought that unit cash, the next unit that I bought, which was my last deal a couple months ago, I did my math and I for and obviously I never counted the flood insurance, because when you're buying a property with a mortgage, when you're, you know, financing a property, you have to pay for flood insurance because the mortgage lender requires you to do that.
Yeah, they require a lot of things.
Yeah, they do.
100%. So how much was the flood insurance? If you don't mind me, you don't have to say if you don't want to.
Yeah. So I believe it's like $60 a month, which is a lot. Let me explain why it's a lot, right?
What was the rent?
The rent's $1,300.
Oh yeah.
But hold on. Let me explain why it's a lot. So it's only $60 a month. I should be paying a lot more because the association pays for flood insurance.
Oh, no way.
So they wanted me to have $80,000 or so of, you know, coverage.
Yeah.
So the association pays for $60,000 for the unit.
Oh, I see.
So I had to get that gap insurance, you know, to cover $20,000. So with the $10,000 deductible on the $20,000 of insurance, I pay, you know, $60 a month. And what I pay for insurance for the unit, you know, not flood insurance, just, you know, general liability and damage, I pay about $40 a month. So
what's your HOA? The association fee. HOA is
The association HOA fee. Yeah. That's another thing that I just learned. I just made a mistake on.
So you didn't account that into your cost.
No, the associate. Yeah, I always account. Yes. Okay. No. But here's what happened with the association fee. Always double check when you have an association fee. Always make sure it is what they claim it is. Because I did my math. And I had pretty much, they had pretty much told me that the association fee was about $180 a month.
Okay.
The day of closing, when I get all the paperwork and I'm signing, you know, you got to sign at least, you know, 50 times.
Yes. It's a lot.
And I look at the association paper saying how much I'm going to be paying. It ended up being $260 a month.
$206? So you're talking about an $80 difference.
$80 difference.
Which on a unit that rents for $1,300 is a lot.
It is.
Dude, that's a lot.
It's a lot. So $80 difference and then the $60 difference. Yeah. So now you're looking at $110. Yeah. Or no, I mean $140.
My bad. That's over 10%.
Mm-hmm. So luckily the deal was going to cash flow at about 23 to 24%.
Mm-hmm.
So after those hidden expenses, it cashed. Oh,
so it literally took your cash flow in half.
Actually, it wasn't that bad. Okay. I mean, it was bad. Yeah. I would think I'm at like 17, 16% cash flow. Okay. So, you know, almost 10% of the cash flow.
Dang, that's a big chunk.
Yeah. So yeah, unfortunately, that's something I just learned, you know, my fifth deal.
Mm.
I learned that, you know, always double check your association costs. And the closing process took forever because, you know, the mortgage lender,
mm-hmm.
I'll never use them again. They were horrible. It took him 3 months to close. And I have all my ducks in a row.
Mm-hmm.
My income,
you had your
my
papers. Credits,
everything. Wow. I have everything in a row. And it took him 3 months to close. So I was just exhausted of dealing with them. I was at the closing table. So I told myself I wasn't going to let those $80,
mm-hmm.
you know, just ruin the deal and me backing out. It really wasn't worth it for me to back out at the closing table.
Was it a small bank or was it like a credit union?
No,
or?
It's a huge bank.
Oh, I see.
You know, I'll disclose Wintrust. You know, I don't know if you guys want to include that.
Yeah.
But I would never use them again.
Well, they're such a big bank. Like they do so many, they have so many different.
Yeah.
You know, like I use one of the banks that it's owned by that company.
Yeah.
You know, and they did a great job. So I was closing on a 36 unit
mm-hmm.
and it took them like a month.
Yeah. Well, I had a good experience before that with them.
Oh, really?
So, but ever since that sour experience, I'm never doing it again.
Dang.
I'm never going with Wintrust. And luckily, one of my best buds, he's a mortgage lender. He was at the meetup.
Yeah, your dude.
His name's Roger.
Roger. Yeah, I remember that.
He's a mortgage lender for a different company, and you know, I'm dealing with them now.
Yeah.
And most, I only went with Wintrust because he was working with them at the time. Mm. So now I'm dealing with him over here. I'd rather work with him than obviously them.
I see.
Yeah, there's hidden costs. There's stuff that, you know, they won't disclose. So, you know, always double check. If you're dealing with an association, make sure it is what they state in the beginning. That way you're not wasting your time later on in the deal. And find out if it's in a floodplain. Because flood insurance is really expensive. Like I mentioned, if the association did not cover any of the flood insurance, I would probably be paying, I think I got estimates for like, it was like $140-150 a month.
Wow.
For insurance.
And that's significant.
Yeah. For a condo on the second, for sure, on the second unit.
Dang.
So it's like, what are the chances of it, you know, flooding? Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was a good learning experience for me.
Hmm. What else did you learn with the condo?
With the condo?
With the first one. Because you always learn the most in the first one. You know what I mean? Well, the first one, I'm sorry. I always say the first one's like the hardest. Because, mm-hmm. you know, you're just like your fingers are shaking as you sign like the closing documents. Yeah. I know that was for me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to remember right now in the spot. And like closing went super fast because it was cash. Like I'm trying to think of what you know completely changed it all for me, but honestly I can't think of anything on the top of my mind. Like I felt like I was so ready. I felt like, dude, I've been waiting for this day for like
five years, right? You were spending every single day, you know, learning about real estate.
Yeah, so I don't know, I really can't recall a specific moment that I'm like, oh, you know, I won't do this again.
So what would you say? No, you're good. So what would you say is like either the thing you wish you would have done differently going into your first deal / man, I'm super glad I had this in my brain going to that first deal, right? Because I know you said it took five years to prepare, which I think most people don't do enough. Like they don't really do the whole preparation thing.
Yeah.
You know, before that first deal, people kind of just jump into it. But what's something that either A, you wish you would have changed in the preparation for the first deal, or what's something that you're really glad you knew, like going into that first one?
Yeah, so I'm glad I knew, you know, the costs with the unit, the holding costs, you know, the upgrading it or whatever, the renovating it. But I guess another thing was, what was the first question you asked me?
Yeah. So what would you change? Like,
so I'll be quite honest. Since it was a condo, what I should have done is investigate the property management company, like for the building, like the management company, because right now the issue I'm dealing with them is that they're horrible. So if you are buying a deal that's, you know, governed by an association, and you got to deal with a management company, you got to try to make sure they're reliable and they're good.
Yeah.
Because the company I'm dealing with, they never answer my phone calls. They just take their sweet time with everything, any request you have. Mm-hmm. So maybe after what I've experienced, I don't think I will do a condo again. I think I would stick to, you know, like multifamily ownership where you own the whole building.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like single family homes. So I would not recommend a condo because of the association, but at the same time, it is like, it does have its pros because you're not responsible for like the roof. Mm-hmm. You're not responsible for the landscaping. So in a way it is less issues, but once an issue does, you know, come up, it's like, it's harder to address the issue because you got to communicate with so many other people. Mm. Where like, if you own the building, you just get a handyman out there, fix it, and we're good. Where like with this condo, I have to call the management company, and then I got to call the maintenance guy to shut off the water, to do you know, water repair, stuff like that. So yeah. And, I guess another thing I learned is, inspect the unit. Always do the inspection because I paid the inspection fee before and I thought I got scammed. I didn't like that I paid $500 for like, you know, it was a big report, but I'm like, I really paid $500. So I skipped the inspection report. And I would definitely recommend you do, you always get an inspection.
Yeah. I've done that before. I skipped, yeah. I skipped the inspection report. Regretted every single time.
Yeah. And I've done it again. You know, I did it again. Mm. But sometimes the issues that are within the walls, there's no way you're going to know about them. So, yeah. So that's what I guess what I learned from the first deal. Your second question,
Yeah. What are things that you were glad you did to prepare?
Research, not really research, but like know what are the expenses with holding real estate, you know, the utility bills, you know, how long it's going to take. It's going to take a few months for you to rent it out if you're going to do work to it. So holding costs, that's something I learned about. There's going to be holding costs and it's always going to be more than what you think, always. So don't be conservative with your numbers. So now what I do is I overestimate everything. I kind of do it. I get ridiculous with it because if it's less, it's like icing on the cake. Mm. And always have a budget for repairs. Always.
Yeah.
So I notice a lot of like newbies, they'll be like, oh, this is going to cash flow or whatever. And then they won't ever have like a budget for repairs. And you're always going to have repairs or you're always going to have something occur. So always have. Never forget about that budget. And it's hard to say how much, because I've had people ask me, well, how much do I put? You know, like some people do like 8-10% of the rent. Mm-hmm. But it just depends on how old the property is.
Yeah. Well, it depends on the like classification. So if you're talking about like multifamily, like if you're in class A, like you're really not going to have a whole lot of repairs. Mm-hmm. Just because you do have higher quality tenants. They're going to take care of it like if it's their own. But if you're like class C or D, then, you know, it's a lot of repairs.
Yeah.
My wife, she's selling her 4-unit right now. Mm-hmm. She's closing on it, I think like April or something like that. But she owned this 4-unit for like a little over a year because she got it, I think, while we were dating. And like on paper, she was supposed to cash flow $1,050 a month. Mm-hmm. And the first year she was negative 6,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's repairs, man.
That's
repairs. And she had it inspected and everything. And then, you know, she did stairs, like her latest project before she's like, that's it, I'm going to sell it. It was, she had like the city inspector came out, which always is like your heartbeat. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care how well you deal with anxiety. Like when you're a landlord and you're an inspection. And then you already own it and the city inspector is like walking around with you. You're just like,
you're like, please don't point that out. Don't point that out. Or you just want it to go smooth.
Exactly.
But I mean, they always will point something out.
Yeah. Well, she had like stairs on the side of her building. And I don't remember what the primary issue was, but the city inspector said that the stairs were off by like a quarter of an inch and it wasn't up to code.
The pitch?
Or something like that.
The pitch of the stairs?
Yeah. That actually sounds really familiar. Wow. So it was off by like a quarter of an inch. So she had to redo the whole thing. And like the stairs were in okay condition. Mm-hmm. Like if you were to look at it, be like, all right, well, you could tell it's old,
doable,
but still works, right? And I think she ended up paying. The guy charged her like $4,500.
Jeez.
To do like two sets of stairs. So there was one in the back that wasn't as big. And then there was
full staircases? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, but not like crazy huge. So probably like you're about like you're 5'10", 5'11".
Yeah.
So it was probably like from the floor up and the door was probably about where you would be, you know, in terms of like your head.
Okay. So
it wasn't like a huge staircase. And then the other one in the back was like half its size.
Yeah.
But that cost her like $4,500. And then she had to, another issue inspector pointed out, the ceilings were too low. So she had to get a guy to demo the top and then she had to pay another drywall guy. The whole thing.
Oh my God, that sounds expensive.
Yeah, and my wife, she's very frugal.
Yeah,
like she's not one to throw away money or anything like that. You know, and
did she do some shopping?
Yeah,
she did look.
Well, fortunately, I hooked her up with one of my dudes. Really, shout out to Hans Blymude. Right, so goes to my church. Did a really good job. Mm-hmm. Did a demo project. She got a bid for like $1,500 from one guy.
Okay,
and I think he did it for like $400. Yeah, it was nuts.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. But the whole project with the drywall and the demo, like the whole thing cost her like $1,300, and it was just a whole bunch of stuff. But the ceiling and the stairs happened like within a span of 2 weeks. So now you're talking, add those two up, and it's just,
it gets overwhelming.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it's part of the game. So, yeah, that's why I always underestimate. I mean, overestimate. Always overestimate. So sometimes what I want to do now is, like, if I buy a property, I always add like 15, 20 grand to the purchase price, depending on obviously how expensive it is. And even if you don't use that money, you know, just imagine you're going to use it at some point. And, you know, that's like the only way to like keep your mind at ease, you know, overestimate everything.
Yeah. And that's key in apartments.
Yeah.
Cause you make one mistake with one unit, and then you got to multiply that by like 12 or 15. And that's where it like really costs you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I just remembered, you know, hearing you speak, you know, I kind of started thinking. So another good thing, you know, I'm glad I did before I bought my first unit was just learn to be patient and screen correctly. Because I hear stories that people just get in whoever they want, or they get anxiety because they have a unit, especially if you have a mortgage on it. You have a unit you're paying a mortgage on, and you don't have income coming in. Mm-hmm. So you know, you get anxiety.
Yeah, you want to take the first person.
You almost want to take the first person half decent credit. Exactly, because they're telling you, oh, I'm going to pay you. You know, my credit's not that good, but I'm going to pay you. You know, and you want that income coming in because you want that mortgage covered. So one good thing is make sure you learn how to tenant screen and have reserves. Have reserves for when you do, you know, if it does take a couple months to get it rented out, have reserves to pay for that mortgage. Mm-hmm. You know, at the time, I didn't have a mortgage. So ease of mind, you know, I didn't have a mortgage payment, but yeah.
And you do the screening yourself?
I like to do the screening myself because I feel like you can't really no one's going to care about your investment as much as you do.
100%, man.
Yeah.
100%.
And my buddy's actually, he has a townhouse that he's renting out, and he just had this issue. I'm like, so who screened it? Oh, my agent screened, you know, they send us a report, this and that. Well, you hear stories that people make up reports or, you know, they'll fluff the numbers to like get approved. So if you're paying the agent commission to get you a tenant, you know, maybe their intention wasn't to screw you, but since it's not their investment, they're not on top of it.
Right.
So they say, I think until I find someone that I can trust, I guess, I'd rather invest my time on that, because that's the key to a good rental property, a good tenant
100%. That's going to pay. Yeah. That's why I'm actually really excited. I know we're going to talk about this later, but the management software that Sammy and I are working on, I'm like super excited because it's going to solve a lot of problems.
Yeah.
A lot of headaches.
There's a lot of issues.
Yeah.
Yeah. For landlords.
100%. All right, my man, any last words for our listeners? This is the first deal experience. So I know a lot of people right now are, they're looking to do their first deal. You know, a lot of them probably just sniff around podcasts and videos and books and things like that. So any pieces of advice for them? Cause you've done, how many deals have you done so far? So
I've done six deals. One of them isn't my deal necessarily. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm helping my mom invest too, but I run the whole show. You know, she just collects the pay.
Yeah, for sure.
But I do all the operations.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm hoping this year to, you know, get another half dozen under my belt.
Yeah. How many units do you have now?
I have five units.
Okay.
5 units to myself. And then, yeah, my goal's anywhere between 10 and 15 by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. I'm not really looking. I look for a good deal. Mm-hmm. Right now, I feel like that's why I like single family homes, because there's just so much inventory. So I feel like it's easier for me to pick and choose. With like multifamily, it's less inventory. Mm-hmm. But eventually, that's my goal, multifamily for sure. Once I grow a little bit with the single family operations. But ultimately, I chase a good deal. My advice is to learn, to get educated, and but there's going to come a time where it's like you need to jump in. Mm-hmm. You know, don't procrastinate. Don't think that you're going to, because ultimately the best learning experience for me was doing, and for everyone, you know, you don't fully learn until you jump in, and you learn as you go. So prepare yourself by, you know, looking at your expenses that has to do with the property you're going to buy. Be realistic with the income, mm-hmm. and be realistic that stuff will happen. It's not going to be perfect. If this was easy, everybody would be doing it. You know, it could get stressful at times, overwhelming or whatever, but it's so worth it because you're not stressed out all the time. It's just that one time where, like, you know, you put the pressure on yourself. I put the pressure on myself all the time. So learn, get educated, and ultimately knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. But you're going to have to jump in eventually, and it's going to be scary. Mm. But if you surround yourself with like-minded people, you know, that are going to help you there for when you have questions, that's ultimately the best thing you can do. So stuff like this, podcasts, audiobooks, YouTube, and then some people, you know, if they want to pay for a course, it's all worth it because the return on investment on all this education is infinite. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's my take on it. And yeah.
Yeah. I love it, man. Hey, thanks for being here. Alex Sanchez, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Good stuff.